This is the Apple This Extra.
Hello, everybody. My name is Thomas Donville, also known as Anonymous. Welcome to another Apple This Extra. I am here with Alex Hall. And Alex, I believe this is number 50.
I believe so. I didn't realize that, actually. But I think you're right. It is big 50. I kind of can't believe it. But
I know. Big 50 is like our anniversary there or something. All right. Well, we have here a special guest with us today. And a lot of you have been pulling your hair out, just like myself, but it's very addictive. And I have spent way too many hours playing this game, but the game is called Black Box, think outside of the box. And here with me is the developer of that game. His name is Ryan McLeod. How are you?
Hey, guys. Great. A little smoky where I'm at. Some fires, but good.
Oh, that's right. You're in the Southwest California where there's lots of fireworks.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, hey, okay. So let's back up here. So people that are listening to this podcast, they just heard Black Box and they're thinking, what in the world is this Black Box thing? And I think if anybody can describe it better than I can, it would be you. So if you would tell me, Ryan, what is Black Box, think out of the box, is to a person that's never even seen it or even know what Black Box is?
Sure. Yeah, I usually think other people tend to describe it better than I can, but the way I describe it is it's a sort of a game for practicing creative thinking by solving puzzles where you generally don't touch the screen. So solving puzzles by using places or time or people or things. It's really hard to describe without sort of spoiling it, but that's the intriguing gist, I guess.
I have to agree. I think you summed it up really well, because really it is really hard to explain without looking at it. So I would say to people, download it, try it, you'll know what I mean.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? There's a I understand there's a congratulation in order, because you were chosen as one of the WWDC Apple design design winner for being the most accessible app of the year. Congratulations. Yeah. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm still kind of in shock about it.
Did you have any clue that they were going to announce you?
Not really. I mean, they dragged us aside in secret on Monday and sort of told us, but didn't really know what was going on. I had to keep that a secret till Wednesday. So,
oh my gosh! So you knew on Monday that you were going to be picked, and then on Wednesday, you had to pretend you were excited, right?
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to tell anyone.
Oh my gosh, that's wow! Well, I hate to say this, but how did you feel? I mean, I couldn't imagine you were in front of everybody.
Yeah. No, it was pretty emotional. I mean, they didn't do it like a public thing this year, but it was just a lot of feelings. It's something I've sort of aspired to for a long time. I mean, since I was a kid to a degree, so didn't know if it was something that was possible, and now it's sitting next to me. So
wow, what did they give you?
So the sort of trophy, if you will, is like this aluminum cube with the like Apple logo on top, sort of how the MacBooks used to be, and so like it glows when you touch it. It's capacitive.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
and did you?
It's really heavy.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, it's really heavy. It's just like a 6-inch cube, maybe. Weighs maybe 20-something pounds. I don't know. I haven't weighed it yet.
Wow. Boy, man, that's pretty deluxe and well built then.
Yeah, it feels like an Apple product.
Oh, wow. Well, so you didn't have to apply for this or put your name down or anything?
No.
Wow. That just blows my mind. I'm sure it blew your mind too that they chose you for this. And I have to commend you, and I have to agree with the award that they gave you on this game, because this is such a unique game. I have never seen a game like this. It is so awesome to play that it found its home right on the first page of my phone. And
oh, that's awesome.
Oh, it's just I love the fact that it's just extremely challenging, and
yeah.
It really does exercise your mind, and you have to think beyond, and because you only give a visual cue, which we can hear mm-hmm. being described, so it's kind of a very short hint.
Yeah.
And so I got to ask you, now how long have this game been out since you created it? How long has it been in the Apple Store?
It's been a little over a year. It came out February 25th, 2016.
And so. You received a lot of awards for this, or are you gotten a lot of...
No. I mean, it's people love it, but I'm not really... I don't consider myself a part of the game industry. I mean, I am now, but at the time, I wasn't. I consider myself, like, a new developer. So I wasn't very good at getting press for the game and stuff. And all these gaming awards happened, and I sort of thought they just happened on their own. And, you know, Black Box is not the biggest iOS game or anything, so it wasn't getting attention. And, you know, learn from friends in the gaming industry later, it's like, oh, no, you have to apply to all these awards and stuff. So pretty much the only award Black Box has won is the design award. So,
but I'm not just one.
I think that's all I want.
Yeah. You know, of course, the Flappy Bird crappy games get the win, right? You know?
Yeah,
it's like, oh, yeah, let's put some nonsense, non-thinking game in there and make it win. But, you know.
It's just how it works.
Yeah, that's how it works. But so, okay, so because it's so unique, how in the world did you get an idea to do something like that?
Yeah. So people have asked this, and I hadn't really thought about it. I mean, I have thought about it now, and I think I can trace it back to a few different apps and games that have sort of inspired it. And I don't think most of these are that accessible, but I used to be really into a game called Fez, Machinarium, Portal, Limbo. A lot of these games where there aren't many instructions, and you sort of you're generally solving like some sort of puzzle. And they're designed in such a way where like the satisfaction really comes from within when you figure it out. It's not just like a skill that you get better at. And so I've always really appreciated that. And then going years back, like when the iPhone first came out, 10 years ago now, I guess, sort of a lot of people realized like it was this platform of sensors. And you started seeing hardware products where, you know, they would just rely on the iPhone to sort of provide the brains and the sensors and the screens and stuff. But a lot of apps were just, you know, kind of like websites where they took place under the screen. So maybe you'd see a cool like labyrinth ball marble like puzzle maze thing where you tilted the phone or something like that. But not a lot of stuff where they were really using all of the sensors. And there was an interesting audio app that came out in promotion with the movie Inception. And it's sort of for creating these like audio dreamscapes. So you put on headphones and it mixes microphone input from the world and sort of makes like a weird dreamscape. But you can unlock different ones by doing things like opening it late at night or opening when it's raining or going to Africa is like one of the crazy ones. And I think that sort of like gave me the idea of like doing interesting Easter eggs with all the things that iPhone knows. And there were other apps from there that sort of, I guess, blew open that idea for me. And then I just started seeing everywhere all this potential. And once you set the limitation of, you know, don't touch the screen, because so many apps were going in that direction of just, you know, one swipe or one touch and just getting like simpler and simpler with these kind of, I don't know, dumb mechanics. So I sort of set the limitation of like, well, what can you do if you don't touch the screen? And once you have that limitation, the ideas kind of come pretty naturally.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. A lot of the games are doing just very non-technical, like trying to make it as simple as possible, not like some Xbox game where you got to use all 20 different buttons to do something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the what was that? The Run Mario Run was one of the first thing we saw last year, where we just tap once and it jumps. And but of course, none of that was accessible. But the idea behind it was there, and I think a lot of people took off from that. And that is really okay. And so you came out with this last year, and so you came up with this very unique, cool idea to use all the features that's built in the iPhone itself. The everything that you could use is in this game. So, and what I am curious now, to what point did you find out about VoiceOver? And how that came about?
Yeah, that was interesting. So I didn't know about VoiceOver for a long time. I used to be a web developer, and so I knew a lot about accessibility on the web and stuff like that, but hadn't really thought about it on iOS. And I wasn't an iOS developer, you know, 2 years ago, I think, sort of when I started on that. And I have some friends that work on workflow, and they sort of showed me some of the VoiceOver features, which, like, when I saw a screen curtain, that sort of blew my mind. Because it was you know, they're explaining, like, oh, you turn up the speed and people get so good at listening to it that they're just like completely cutting off what you're hearing, and you just swipe and like turn these things, and then, like, you don't even need to see the screen a lot of times, so it's just like you can walk around and have your battery last a week. It's just like, what? Like, I didn't even know that was there. So it was always kind of on my mind. But yeah, I mean, I didn't really know the full potential of it until I started getting into it and, like, really had to learn it myself.
So did you have to learn VoiceOver for, like, your web development stuff? Did you eventually get into it for that? Or was it just more of a curiosity thing at that point once you found out about it?
You mean when I found out about it for iOS?
Yeah, so did you, like you said, you started to learn how it worked and everything. Did you do that to better your web development and accessibility testing in that area?
Oh, I mean, when I was doing the web stuff, I don't even think I was very aware of, like, how screen readers, you know, potentially navigated, but just, like, the tags that needed to be in place, or, you know, why images needed to be labeled and stuff like that. When it came to iOS, it was more, I guess, like, practical. I understood how people were actually using it.
Wow. You said, too, that this was about 2 years ago that you started learning about iOS development. Does that mean that Black Box is your first app?
Yeah. It was.
That's really impressive.
Thanks.
Wow.
It took a while to come together, but it was sort of a way to learn iOS originally, too. Because I sort of wanted to get out of web development, and I had this idea for a game, but it also is sort of a way to, like, sort of touch all the different iOS features and learn them.
Definitely.
It wasn't so much like I was trying to exhaust all the sensors and stuff, but I was just, like, you know, always trying to not run out of ideas that didn't involve touching the screen. And then as I sort of handed a prototype of it to different friends, I'd have trouble getting my phone back, you know, to realize there might be something there, and started, like, opening it up to more friends. And
wow. I mean, just to rub elbows with the people from Workflow, it remind me, didn't they win the 2016 Apple Award?
I think 2015, I think.
15,
was it
15?
Okay.
It was one of those years, and I remember, wait a minute, they also won an Apple winning, too, because the design winner, because of being the most accessible. So, what an opportunity to be able to rub elbow with those people to help you figure out what VoiceOver is. Now, did you have people on your that helped you in beta to get the VoiceOver, or did you do that all yourself?
I had some people. So I think that was sort of what sparked the whole thing off, is, you know, it's something that I had in mind, but thought was really hard. I sort of, like, I toy around with the idea with people from time to time. Most developers and friends would just be kind of like, I don't know how you would do that. I mean, it seems pretty impossible for something like Black Box, and it, like, sort of, I don't know, it made me angry that I couldn't find a solution to it, but it was something, you know, so many other things going on. And then a player reached out on Twitter and had asked, you know, like, what's the voiceover support like? I was like, ah, damn it. I got to make this better. Because at some point I had gone through and sort of worked on dynamic type. And once I got in and did dynamic type, I was like, oh man, I need to fix some of these voiceover labels and stuff. But it really was only helpful if you were, you know, reading elements, but not like fully using it to navigate or not, you know, fully blind. So.
Well, you know, I'll be honest. I would probably be one of those negative people at first too, probably thinking, how in the world would you make this accessible?
yeah.
But that's so cool that you were able to prove them wrong and say, you know what, we can make this accessible. So
yeah.
How long was the process that it took you to make it voiceover accessible?
It went pretty fast. I think it was something that had sort of been in mind, but it was waiting for the right moment. So once I started looking into it and I sort of learned about Apple Viz and stuff like that and had learned or had met a few of these players online, I sort of realized I could, you know, work with some people to learn how things really worked, because I needed someone that understood how the game worked for sighted players and then could like kind of translate that. Not translate it, but could understand that in between of like what would make sense as analogs, I guess, because mm-hmm. for me, I don't have that experience. And then I sort of realized a friend of mine, Gus Callahan, who did all the sort of sound design, you know, had like excellent skills in sound design, but also in like dynamically generated sound. And I realized I needed to convert my audio engine from a library that was kind of, you know, seeing its end of life to something newer that could really well support those dynamically generated sounds. Mm-hmm. And so I just started, pulled the trigger and was like, you know, I have these other things on the timeline, but this is important now. And so like, let's see what we can get done with this. And I think the whole process was around 2 months, maybe a little more.
Oh, wow. It's pretty short. That's not what I expected.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because it was going through every single challenge of the game. It was sort of interesting. I hadn't touched a lot of them in, you know, a year.
Yeah.
And then I'd go through and be like, this is horrible. Who wrote this? To redo this. Who was I? There's a strata experience through the thing. So it was a long process. I think initially I thought of like a couple of the challenges, some of the ones that I thought would be tougher to figure out, like the very first challenge. And I pitched some ideas to some people. It was like, what if it just, you know, made these different sounds and they kind of like came in and out of phase of sounding more, you know, good or bad sort of thing. And had thought through several of the challenges, but hadn't thought through the whole game, to be honest. And then I got, you know, partway in it was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was getting into here, but we're going to figure out solutions for all of these.
The sound design is something that's so integral. I didn't really notice it at first, but it definitely does help in a lot of the challenges. You know, the sound will do this or do that and kind of indicate sort of what you're doing might be right or wrong. Another thing I found really interesting, and older iPhones won't get this and iPads won't get this, but if you're using an iPhone 7, you get a lot of this really subtle taptic feedback or yes. haptic feedback if you're not in the Apple okay. world. And it's just, it sounds so good and it feels good because it's synced with the sounds that you're hearing. And a lot of things generate these little taps or these stronger ones. And just the subtlety of the vibration is something else that I find really enjoyable in the game, even though it's not central to the game.
Yeah.
Very few apps use this, and I wish more would, and I'm really glad that you did do that. Was that something that came out of this whole process, or was that a whole separate idea that you just wanted to incorporate that taptic stuff as much as possible?
I was so excited when that stuff came out. The iPhone 7 came out, and I got it as soon as... Well, what we saw is that in the APIs a couple weeks before, they sort of showcased like what this was going to look like, and I think the iPhone 7 had been announced at that point. I was like, I got to get this. And so I got it in really fast and shipped it when the iPhone 7 came out.
Oh, nice.
But then later realized that, yeah, it's a kind of neat accessibility thing in a way too. And there's only like 5 or 7 different sort of taptic feedback things that we can do.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that we can get Apple to expose more of those to developers. because they're really, really neat ones if you've ever used the like message effects. Like if you send the effect with balloons, it like makes a feeling like a balloon inflating, almost like this very low hum sort of vibration. Yeah. And I think a lot of that could be used well for it's another dimension of feedback, like adding the sonic interfaces. Now you have these sort of haptic ones too.
So you're not even custom programming all these Taptic things. You're just using the built-in ones?
I would. I mean, we can't.
Right. No, but I mean, right now, like what the game has is just Apple's built-in stuff. That's pretty remarkable. I kind of thought you'd found a way to sync it with your sounds and everything, actually.
No, I.
Wow.
Some of them are like there's success haptics and failure haptics. That's sort of like tone up, tone down sort of feeling. And those are really only supposed to be used, you know, when something is indicating success or failure, but I might use them when something is like shaking or something like that. Then there's the very subtle selection one.
I'm kind of surprised Apple lets you do that. I've heard a lot of stories about Apple saying, oh, you're not using this the way we want you to, so we're not going to approve your app right now until you change
it. Yeah. I think it's one of those subtle things that maybe gets overlooked a little to a degree, but I think Black Box does it tastefully. Like, the biggest concern is you add way too many haptics and people just start ignoring them. They become meaningless. They need to be salient and kind of on their own, focused.
Wow. Makes sense. So,
yeah. I hope there's more in the future. We'll see.
I do too.
Yeah.
You're great.
Oh, no. I have to agree with you guys. I think the haptic and the sound is made the game more rounded. I think what you did, even for people that are visual, I think just having that little carrot dangling in front of you, knowing, oh, wait a minute, I think I'm doing something right.
And, yeah, exactly.
So I think what you only done is just improve the game for people that have sighted as well, not just for people that are blind.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, Gus did an amazing job. Some of the things are so subtle too, like unless you're an audiophile, you're not going to put your finger on it, but you know, like notes that are part of a chord that are sort of coming into sync with the key that they're in as you get closer to an answer and stuff, things that I don't even fully understand, but really help with it. Something interesting with the sounds too is going back to like originally adding the voiceover sort of support is I had this idea that, you know, the game has very little text. It's all about the visual clues if you're sighted. And so I wanted the sonic interfaces to be like complete analogs. So there would be almost no voiceover spoken text. But that's where like things started getting really difficult. It's like, how do you describe certain iconographic things in, you know, a sonic or auditory way? It gets really difficult. So when I realized it wasn't that bad to add voiceover descriptions of some of the visuals, it became more fun to like, I think we were able to crank through the challenges a little faster, and then just focus on the sonics as sort of like that subtle feedback you described where it's like, oh, you're kind of close to the answer, but not.
Yeah. And because all your visual clues are all graphic, that must have been difficult for you to figure out how to describe what you're seeing.
It's very interesting because you want the sounds to be in sync, right? So like you said, the sounds help sighted players sort of like get a more rounded experience also. So you don't want the sounds to be completely different. But like the game, if you add visuals or you add a mechanic that doesn't have anything to do with the puzzle, it can throw people off or you make the sound at the wrong time and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it is really difficult. And just getting feedback from people on AppleVis too is interesting because, you know, someone might think it's not descriptive enough, but then you sort of explain, well, like, it's very difficult for sighted players too. You know? It's not clear to them what this is either. So,
well, yeah,
it's tough.
Oh, I've seen that, and I have to agree with you. I mean, it's like, well, they're only seeing a picture, and they're going to be saying, "What is that?" And you know, I can only describe it to you what they're seeing without telling you too much. And you've had a really long going, lots of comments of asking help, help. You know, I think the toughest one I think most people were asking was Puzzle 17, I think it was. And now, before I get to that, now, when I say Puzzle number 17, now, I know a lot of people are getting confused, and you were trying to describe this, but there isn't like a straight number. So I know there's, what, 71 puzzles?
71 right now.
And so it isn't like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It doesn't like go in a numeric order, yeah. Right?
So it's in, as you're saying this, I was pulling up my cheat sheet because I don't have all the numbers memorized often. So for me, the numbers were, it's always sort of an internal system, and I refer to them by the names. And then I expose the numbers in VoiceOver, and so everyone's referring to them by the numbers, and I'm always having to look up. So I sort of recognize 17 is an infamous one. But yeah. Right. Anyway, you were saying.
Well, no, and so that makes it kind of a challenging for you because, and it is kind of confusing for those that are listening. There is no particular order that you have to go.
Right. Okay. So what's interesting about the game is I made it so you can sort of play the orders in random access. So there's no linear flow. I never wanted anyone to get stuck because everyone thinks differently. Everyone gets stuck on different challenges. So the grid, visually at least, like sort of expands in two dimensions, sort of what appears to be pretty random. And sometimes I've ordered the challenges and I've, based on playtesting, like shuffled around how they appear. And so I have these internal numbers, but they don't just ascend in difficulty or like how they are revealed. And I went back and forth a lot on like, instead of using numbers, you know, saying like the lilac purple challenge or something like that, but ended up going with the numbers. It's definitely confusing. And then like as people sort of find like meta challenges, they might be exposing numbers at different rates too. So it's just a way to refer to it. It's not intentionally confusing.
But it's really neat. The use of the numbers being completely out of order is actually intentional so that you don't get stuck in this idea that I have to solve puzzle 6 before I can move on to puzzle 7. So you intentionally, you have 6 and then maybe 10 pops up so that it's another one of your subtle things here. It's another subtle way of saying, don't go in order. The numbers don't matter. I never thought of that before. That's really neat.
There's a little bit of thought to that. I think it does trip people up at the very beginning, but I think people do sort of figure it out. I mean, it's still a trouble for sighted players as well, where they get very fixated on like solving everything that is exposed in one section before they unlock the next section and stuff like that. It's like, it's not how it's meant to be played. You know, go at your own pace, open whatever you want. It's meant to be explored and left and revisited.
And you have many, many, many different ways to. You do have hints. I just want to let the people know out there that you can ask for help. Sometimes they're really good, and sometimes I just get more confused.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's good feedback. I'm working on a new hint system that I think will help with that. So that should be out soon.
Oh yeah, what can we expect?
Well, it's just always been difficult to know. Like when someone's at a point where they need a hint or want a hint, like what they already know. So it's like, do they understand the mechanic of the puzzle already? If you tell the mechanic, like, are they just gonna be like, yeah, well, I already knew that, you know, that was a waste. Are you going to help too much? In which case, like they're sort of robbed of their aha moment. So I try to just bridge the gap a little closer so that there's still a little bit of a riddle for the player to, even if it's just putting together what the hint means, that there's some satisfaction in that before they can solve the puzzle. But it's been very difficult, just like tuning the challenges to work to how everyone's mind works. So I'm working on a new system that will have multiple hints per challenge. So the hints will be sort of cheaper first off. Then there'll be like an easy and a medium and a more revealing hint, I guess. So if you just want a little bit of a nudge that doesn't ruin it, you can get that more easily. And if you want something that, like, you know, basically tells you what to do, you can use more coins for that.
So, and you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but are you a full-time developer? Is this your thing now, or are you still doing other things as well?
Nope. Yeah, I'm doing this happily full-time now. So,
every time you're prompted to pay a dollar for 3 hints or whatever it is, people pay up the dollar. It's not a big deal. You can use it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's it's still like any other app or game. It's, you know, less than 2% of people doing that. But that is entirely how I live my life now, which is sort of strange because it comes in $1, $2 increments, you know.
That's got to be nerve-wracking.
Yeah, it's definitely, it keeps me motivated to work and release more things and keep working on it. But it's a lot of fun.
No, I like how you do that. I love it when you go in and buy the different packaging. And one of my favorite was just to buy you a sandwich. And all the little sense of humor in there, I love that. support him. Get him a drink, too. Come on. I love that. And so I'm, you know, of the many, 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 many comments I've seen on AppleViz, are you getting pretty good feedback and lots of helpful ideas about the game, or most of them are just asking help?
there's been a lot of help lately, but I've definitely gotten a lot of good feedback. I mean, accessibility is just sort of becoming a part of the design process for me, and there's still things that need to improve, and that's for all players of the game. So there's been a lot of feedback on, you know, just exploring, like, the home grid is really confusing, especially that's one thing with the numbering right now. So if you're a player that likes to swipe through the elements, I think it was going in ascending number order. It was going by a different order than they were, like, spatially arranged. So I got a lot of good feedback on that, and I'm switching in the next version to navigate more spatially. So if you're doing, like, the drag to sort of feel where things are, it'll match that better.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, because you're right. Because the swiping is a totally entirely different of hearing things. And when I put my finger on the screen, in which I touch explore, so I'm as I explore the different grid, I see that. But for some reason, the swiping is different.
Yeah, and just like reading between the lines of what people are saying too in navigating, you know, people aren't always able to say, like, this is exactly the feature you need to build. So I'm able to hear the issues people are having navigating and sort of explore, you know, like, would it make sense to have a rotor for navigating this thing a little differently? Or, you know, the number of people stuck on this, the things that they're saying, does it echo what other players have had on being stuck because they don't understand it yet? Or is it, you know, really impossible to get? Explicit feedback or not, there's been a lot of good help.
Well, yes.
I suppose one thing I don't hear is if players are dropping off, which is always a concern of mine. So if people are reaching a point where it's too difficult or it's too frustrating or the only challenges they have, you know, they know how to solve but don't quite have the time or place to solve it. Those things are a little tough, where I need more like in-person play testing, the sort of things that aren't going to be exposed in like a, you know, 1 hour watching someone play for the first time.
Yeah, well, I think the hints, variation that you're going to give, I mean, that really just depends on the people and their personality. There's just certain people that can withstand and tolerate a week of not sleeping every night to figure out a puzzle. And then there's some that's just like, you know what, if I don't solve this stupid thing in 5 minutes, I'm just going to quit this game.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're going to get the variation of different crowd of people that play these games, you know. It really does vary, and that would be difficult to find a balance to do that.
Yeah, I tend to take blame for all of it. I mean, I used to, when I came out with the game, I was like, this is not going to be a game for everyone, you know, it's only for hardcore puzzle people, and I've changed my position on that, and I'm glad I have. So I was going to add too, there's been a lot of good feedback on the forum, but I've gotten so many good emails from people too. The community, I think, it's all people from AppleViz, just like long emails with detailed explanations of things going wrong, much more than I usually get. It's really easy for me to take that and sort of look into those things and add them to my lists and explore them. So I've got to thank everyone that's written in.
Oh yeah. I mean, getting input from people is always going to help, not just to fix something, but to even make it even more improvement to the game. And who knows, maybe people that are listening, if you love the game that much and you have some new puzzles, I'm sure you would love to hear them, and so you can add them to it. Are you thinking at some point to put more puzzles in?
Oh, yeah, I know. It's been a little bit since I have, but I have one little one that should be going out very soon, and I'm working on a lot more. I've just gotten sort of stuck working on other things that aren't puzzles but are exciting too. So still working on the game full time though.
So speaking of other things, and again, you don't have to answer. Is this your only app, or are you thinking of other apps you might be doing? Are you prototyping anything? Is there anything you're looking to release sometime that's not this particular game?
I guess the short answer is no. I wish I was. I have other ideas, but I'm really bad at doing more than one thing at once.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sort of pour myself into one thing at a time, which currently is Black Box. And I probably will for the rest of the year, at least. I have plenty of challenges and things to build. There are some other little things. There's another game I've wanted to make for a long time that I won't talk about right now, but I've been thinking about the accessibility of that, and a couple other smaller apps and things, but currently just plenty to do on Black Box.
Well, based on what I've seen of Black Box so far, and I only started playing it maybe 3 weeks ago, when Thomas asked me to help him with this podcast, I was like, yeah, okay, I'll give this game a try. And it's living on my home screen too. I open it every day. I'm definitely looking forward to what else you come out with. And certainly being stuck on one app is not a bad thing. It's just means that we get more and better puzzles. So I'm looking forward to it. Honestly, that's a good thing for me.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I get kind of, it makes sense for a lot of games, but I get bummed when it's just sort of, it is what it is and it's released and it has like a big swing of popularity and that's it. I find this more fun where like I have, you know, relationships with people that I'm talking to about the game and how I'm working on it. And it's fun to just keep improving it and keep polishing it.
Oh yeah, no doubt, no doubt. It'll be on my home screen for a long time. I mean, I'm always going to appointments and things like that, and I'm sure people in the room or in the lobby are probably like, "Who's he talking to?" Because I'm like constantly just talking to myself and said, "What in the hell does he mean by this?" Or what? And I'm thinking to myself, moving the phone around. I'm sure they're probably like, "What is wrong with that guy?"
Right.
You know,
it helps helps get the word out there. You see a lot of people going crazy with their phones and they ask, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's true. You know, and I showed it to my son. I said, okay, son, I need help on this puzzle. And he goes, what game you got here? And I showed him. He's like, hey, this is kind of a cool game. I said, yeah, you ought to try it. That way you can help me.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And you give him your link to get a free hint.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now, I've had some people ask me, and I kind of know what the answer is, but some people have asked me, why isn't this on the Game Center?
Mm. Oh, it is.
Oh, it is? Okay, I didn't know that. I'm sorry. So you have different achievements on the Game Center then?
So, I had trouble with this. I decided not to add achievements because the game to me was already designed to sort of be like what an achievement would be in a game, where it's sort of like an Easter egg thing. Every challenge is already that. So it's like, where do you draw the line on creating achievement for every challenge when that's already kind of part of the score? So there's just a leaderboard with the number of challenges solved. And so you can kind of see where you stack up against friends or on the global leaderboard.
Good point.
It's kind of tough because Apple sort of, I don't know, shunted Game Center, so there's no app for it anymore. But there's still a button on the home grid that you can go to, and it'll open the leaderboard, and you can see where you stand.
Yeah, it is kind of odd how Apple went that direction. They just kind of, you know, it used to be up in front, and now it's like they just buried it, and a lot of people, it's starting to just disappear entirely.
And it's hard to know what's going on. I think the intention was that developers would use the new iMessage apps to like send challenges to people and stuff. I'm not exactly sure. I think also like more games need to take advantage of the fact that they can make custom leaderboards, but most of us, it's kind of an afterthought. And so you drop in the native view and then you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
I would like to do that eventually, but it's just low on the list.
Well, I know that some gamers out there that I don't know why. Maybe it's because they can do it on themselves and they can unlock different achievements. But you're right. You do, you have your own set of Easter eggs after you open up certain things. Other things open up, so it's like a Pandora box. It's just you never know. Once you do something, it opens up. You know. Yeah.
There are some people that get very competitive about the leaderboards when new challenges come out. You know, I have to make sure I don't tell anyone too early or try to time the time zone so as many people are awake. But it's fun to see.
Well, I will admit I had to do a Google search for black box help.
Oh no! Wow.
I know.
I'm failing.
No, there really aren't many out there, so you're doing good. You're doing good. You're keeping it.
You know what's funny about that? One of the main walkthroughs that everyone refers to, the creator of that came up with their own number system for the challenges. And they're sort of intentionally hard to refer to. People have always asked to have a name for them, right? So they created a map and put numbers on all the challenges and have been updating it as they come out. And wow. So players will write to me and say, yeah, I can't, how do you do challenge 19 or something? And I'm like, I don't know what that means. You know, like, and I'm not going to go to the walkthrough guide and look it up. But now I've had some players using VoiceOver that come and they say, you know, I went and looked up a guide and it doesn't make any sense. I can't really feel too sorry.
Oh
man.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool, Ryan. I appreciate you coming on for this podcast and telling us a lot about the black box and everything that you put into it and the history. And I will say that this is like no other game I have ever seen. And to have something like this, it's just, it was really nice because there are so many different audio games right now for us. And that's great and all. And some of them are really, really good. And I'm not knocking them. It's just that it gets to the point where it's just like we're waiting for another audio game and another audio game. It's kind of like I'm kind of getting tired of just another audio game. And this was a refreshing breath of air of something just totally new concept and just be able to use our mind in a totally different way than just monotonous rolling the dice or playing cards or whatever. This is just, it does that. And I will warn people out there that when you first play the game, take your time. Take a lot of patience. If you get frustrated, just put it down. Come back to it later. And it is challenging.
Yeah. And very, you can always come back to it.
Exactly. You can come back to it any time.
Thank you. Yeah. But, I think that drives some people nuts. They think, I need to be able to solve it all at once.
And you can't. And that's what I'm trying to tell these people. Is that this is supposed to last you for weeks because there's... It's something you have to think about for a while. It's not something you can do in 5 minutes. No way. But I know Alex and I are stuck on the same puzzle, though. So.
I'm stuck on a few of them, actually. 17?
No, we're actually stuck on the... we think it's a battery power level. And so...
Interesting.
So we've been trying to kind of talk to each other back and forth. And you know what? That's kind of cool, too, because you can actually... talk to other people about this game and share your ideas and stuff like that. And because my wife will tell me, so, well, have you tried this? And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, no, I haven't thought about that. I'm going to go back upstairs. And I'm running up there. I'm playing around. I go, oh, my gosh, she's right. So it's been exhilarating. And it's kind of cool to have my family involved and try to help me solve a puzzle.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think I had no intention for it to be sort of a social game, and that was something that came out as finding out about couples playing it or sort of families all getting in on it and, you know, people figuring out solutions and either sharing them or refusing to share them. Really, nice. Really interesting.
Yeah, we get competitive. We used to do that. Uh-huh. My wife and I used to get very competitive on certain games, and it's kind of like, what, you're on 100 level? 119. Yeah. How'd you get that? I'm not telling you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
I'm so happy it's had that effect for you to be able to play it to that degree. I mean, it was the same when it came out for a lot of people, I think. Just nice to have something different. And I was worried if I just added voiceover in a straight, it's like the what you would immediately think to do with it, that it wouldn't be as fun. It needed to have that same parallel. And so I'm glad it has worked out.
Yeah, it definitely has. I mean, it's just, you know, things automatically speak when things happen. You don't have to touch the screen to do that. There's a lot of ways to get to different things. So it's a lot of individual gestures that I'm glad to see made it in there. Like you said, it's not just, well, let's add a label to this and we're done. It's you put a lot of thought into it, and it's really clear when you're playing the game that this was carefully designed, even from a voiceover perspective. So.
Thanks, Alex.
Definitely. If you get stuck in one direction, you can go to another puzzle and just get your mind out of that and do something else. And it's just nice to be able to move around as you see fit while you can think about a different puzzle.
But right. Exactly. It's not an audio game where you have to play for 10 minutes or you have to, you know, go back to the place you were. You can just pop open an individual little puzzle. You know, if you have 2 minutes, you're standing in line, you're waiting for something, you're waiting for the bus. Just open it. Oh, that's how this works. Oh, okay. You know, it's so modular in that way. It's really nice.
I think people find too that they can they'll be doing other things and sort of solving them in their mind. Like, oh, I need to go try that. You know.
Yeah. That's cool. No, that happened to me this morning. I woke up and I'm like, oh wait, oh this is okay. I get it. And I opened it up. I'm like, yep. Oh, there's my light. I win.
Nice,
okay.
Nice. It feels good.
Yeah.
Well. Okay. So if the listeners out there want to get some additional hands, I'm sure you'll get those.
Yeah.
But most of all, the most important thing I'm sure you're looking for is improvements, any suggestions for new puzzles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best place for them to contact you?
Oh, man. Well, I'm on Twitter at Warpling, WARPLING. But for longer stuff, email is great. So just ryan@growpixel.com. And I set up a special one that was A11Y@growpixel too, but both go straight to me.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, that's
yeah, looking forward to that. If something is affecting you and you think it's just you, it's probably affecting magnitudes more. So please do let me know.
Well, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, and like you said, I agree that email is probably the best way to send you, because you can have a more natural conversation going back and forth.
Yeah.
Awesome. And so we can see some new future puzzles coming out and new improvements to it.
Yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah, that'd definitely got some accessibility improvements coming soon, more for iOS 11, hopefully some new puzzles too.
Awesome.
And if people haven't found, they should go to blackboxpuzzles.com.
Okay.
There might be something there.
There might be something there. Huh?
Might be. Right. I know where I'm going after this.
I'm going to say, I think I'm heading to it right now.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and again, had to be an honor for a prestige award that you got this year. Being the Apple design winner, that was just had to been mind-boggling. I'm so glad for you to be able to be there at the new campus and feel the Steve Jobs aura all around you.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I can die happy now. So
well, you have something that will help you propel forward. You know, it's something that you got in your little self you can look at, pick it up, and kiss it and hug it and whatever you want to do with it.
Gives me energy.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. Is there anything else you want to say, Alex?
No, I kind of want to go to that website now and see what I can find.
Well, I just want to thank you guys. I mean, this is a lot of fun. And without AppleViz, it would not be where it is today. So thank you and everyone who's contributed.
Oh, we appreciate
it. And thank you for all your accessibility efforts. I mean, I know I can speak on behalf of everyone who uses voiceover that plays this game. We do really appreciate your efforts here.
It's been a fun challenge for me too. I don't get to play the game, so this is my game to play.
That's true. I never thought of it that way.
And with that, I guess we'll just wrap it up here and say Well, this has been an AppleViz Extra number 50 with Alex and Ryan and myself, and I hope you go out and get the Black Box today in the App Store. It's a free app, and go for it. And remember, be patient, put it down, play some other puzzles and stuff. But anyway, that'll do, and we will see you guys later. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the AppleViz Extra. To learn more about us, visit our website at www.applevis.com. Follow us on Twitter @AppleViz and like us on Facebook.